When I was pregnant with my third child, my husband and I were having a hard time deciding what to name this third one who came along. And we had gotten it down to two names, Zachary and John. So everybody around us was hearing, is it going to be Zachary? Is it going to be John? About 2 weeks before he was due, I was walking out of church and Father Jim handed me a little piece of paper. And when I got home, I opened it up. It said Luke 1:63. So I looked it up and I read, his name is John. Which it is. His name is John. And I love that he's named John after two great saints, John the Beloved and John the Baptist. And today is the feast day of John the Baptist. And John the Baptist is such, it says in the scriptures, he's a wild ass of a man. And he is indeed. He's a prophet. And it's kind of surprising because he came from an upper class family and his parents were both priests in the temple. So he grew up in the temple. But he doesn't stay there. He goes on to live in the desert. And he creates a whole spirituality, but it's not in the church. It's down by the river. It would be as though I said to all of you, next week, I'm all done being in a church. I'm going to hold a service down at Shalott Beach, and I'm going to have kind of a different outfit on. I'm going to wear camel hair, and I'm only going to eat locusts from now on, and I hope you'll come down and worship with me. And you would all say, okay, she's really gone nuts here, right? But that was John. And he did create his own service. He created this service of baptism, which we take for granted now. But for him, it was a new ritual that he created in order to tell people, you have to change your ways. You have to purify yourself. Become ready because somebody greater than me is coming. And you have to get ready for it. You kind of have to break out of the mold you're in. You have to be ready for something new. Now, there's another prophet very much like John the Baptist, and that is Pope Francis that we have right now. Pope Francis is a different kind of pope. He is not your establishment pope. He has done things very differently. The first thing he did when he was first made pope was instead of blessing all the people, he asked the people to bless him. He refused to live in the apostolic palace. He lives in the dorms with the other priests that are there at the Vatican. He refused to ride around in a limousine. He likes to take the bus, and he likes to be in a little Ford Escort. On Holy Thursday, for the first time ever, instead of washing the feet of priests, he washed the feet of Muslims and of women, of people in prison. For his birthday party, he invited the homeless people from Rome to come to it. So he's a very different kind of pope. And he has had a different kind of message. He has told the papacy that it has to change, but he's also said to the cardinals that they must change, the priests must change, the bishops must change, we must change. He's gone on to say the market economy has to change, that capitalism in its rigid form is just as evil as communism. So he's done more than just dabble in politics. He has a strong message for the world. And I think we're very fortunate to live in this time, to have a leader who is willing to step out of what's normal, especially when what is normal becomes destructive to people. We have a spiritual leader that is here to guide us when other leaders are failing us. On Friday, I had my granddaughter, Julia, with me. She's now 13 months old, just the cutest little girl ever in the whole world. And she's learning to walk, so we were outside on the lawn. I had the sprinkler going, so we'd go near the water, then we'd run away from it and play this game. And then she spotted my neighbors have a little toddler swing from a tree, and we have swinging rights on that swing. So she toddled over there and pointed, and I lifted her up, and she was swinging. But the whole time I was with her, I stay right next to her. Because in our yard lately, we've seen a red fox. And I don't want this red fox anywhere near my little granddaughter. So I stay right close to her. And as a parent and a grandparent, that's what we're primed to do, right? We protect our children. We keep them close to us. We watch over them. And they require that we do so. Children need to be protected. When separated from their parents, they experience stress, anxiety, and fear. And in prolonged situations, physical and mental ailments for that separation. So what do we do when the fox is our government? When it is our government that endangers children and is separating them from their immigrant parents? Right now, our president has a zero-tolerance policy on immigration, which was rolled out in May, and among other things, enforces the separation of children from their parents who have been detained by border officials. Now, who are these parents? They are immigrants coming from Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador. They're fleeing tremendous violence from those countries, and so they come into our country to ask for asylum. And when they come in asking for asylum, if they do not come at a port of entry, it is a misdemeanor to cross the border. The punishment in this country right now for crossing that border, for that misdemeanor, is that your children are taken away from you. Since May, over 2,000 children have forcibly been taken from their parents and placed in separate facilities, not near where their parents are staying, but shipped around the country to different places. Shipped by airlines in the middle of the night, the airlines are now refusing to cooperate with that anymore. Yeah. Some of these children are teenagers. Some are what they call tender age, as young as babies that are nursing, 4 years old, 7 years old, 10 years old. The trauma that these children are enduring is evident in their constant crying for mommy and poppy. They're sobbing, they're curling up in a ball and refusing to relate to people. They're symptoms of anxiety and disassociation. Staffs housing these facilities are frustrated with rules that they cannot hug these children or comfort the children. And the parents are desperate to know where their children are and to be reunited with them. Abuses of this already terrible situation continue to be reported with things like tent cities where the temperature in the shade is 100 degrees and in the sun 120 degrees. No child is going to be able to leave the tent that they're placed in. Parents being told that their children is just being taken for a bath and clean clothes and will be back in a few minutes, only to never return. And the stories go on and on and are so disturbing that you cannot even read them without sobbing, and you may have seen many of our news broadcasters, regular news broadcasters, breaking down in tears as they report these stories. Our government says this is a deterrent to immigrants entering the country asking for asylum. And yet they are undeterred. Why? The reasons are simple. Many have not even heard of the policy until they cross the border. For many, the terror of death in their country leaves them no choice but to leave their homes and travel over 1,000 miles with young children in the hope of finding compassion in the United States, that a story they have come to believe. Now, last Thursday, there was a time of hope when our president said he was changing that policy, but as he has done many times, his words were meaningless and untrue. So what do we do? John the Baptist, I think, is a great model for us today, because John the Baptist was very action-oriented. He also lived in a time when of great trauma for many people. But he asked people to take action. He said, anyone who has 2 shirts should share with the one who has none. Anyone who has food should do the same. When tax collectors came to him to be baptized, he said, don't collect any more than you are required to. When soldiers asked him, what should we do? He said, don't extort money and don't accuse people falsely. Be content with your pay. In other words, in whatever position we hold in society, we must think about how it affects other people and what we can do to be humane in our jobs. And finally, John the Baptist always points to Jesus. He's always reminding the people that there is something bigger than ourselves, so that when we do take action, it's not just our action in itself, it's how God can use that action. And God can do so much more with us when we are willing to be servants. The smallest action we take can be a huge action in God's hands. Pope Francis has spoken out on this issue. He backed the U.S. bishop's opposition to the separation of migrant children from their parents at the Mexican border, calling the move immoral and contrary to Catholic values. He said, when migrants arrive in a country, you have to receive them, help them, look after them, accompany them, and then decide where to put them. Last Thursday night, over 50 people gathered at Spiritus to talk about what can we do. There were four groups that got together that night and then broke into groups. One group wanted to focus on registering voters for the next election. A second group focused on letter writing to political leaders. A third group had the idea of creating one box at a time of comforting stuffed animals and toys and blankets that could be shipped to these facilities that are holding children. And the fourth group is working on a rally for next Saturday. That will be June 30th. There will be rallies happening all across the country in every city in Washington, D.C. And Spiritus will join with four other organizations to hold a rally at Washington Square, downtown Rochester, at 3 p.m. I hope that some of you will be able to join us for those. Now, if you do these things, be aware that some people may not like you. I am quite sure that I have some relatives that do not like me. You will be different, just like John the Baptist and Pope Francis. You will be different in a society that right now believes or is acting upon the belief that it is normal to separate children from parents. Sometimes being normal is not where you want to be. You want to be different. Hopefully, we won't have the fate of John the Baptist, who lost his head for criticizing the king. But perhaps we will be like Pope Francis, who has made a lot of people angry by doing things like criticizing nations who turned away boatloads of immigrants, or reaching out to atheists, or stating that the church focuses too much on abortion and homosexuality. Some people may ridicule you. They may defriend you on Facebook. They may challenge you to defend yourself and explain issues that perhaps you don't fully understand. But remember that you do not need to do so. Jesus was silent in the face of his persecutors. And Jesus said to us, "Whatever you do for the least of these members of my family, you do for me. And blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me." You might ask yourself, as I did, does it matter if I go to a rally? Does it matter if I write a letter? I'm just one person. Like, what difference does it make? But it does make a difference. It makes a difference when all across the country there's a rally happening. If it doesn't make a difference to the administration in Washington, D.C., it does make a difference to the rest of the world to know that we do not agree with this policy. And it definitely makes a difference to those parents who are desperately hoping to find their children again. There's a little old story about a traveler who was on his way to another kingdom. Along the way, he saw a small sparrow lying on his back in the middle of the path, with his tiny legs sticking upright into the air. He slowed down and spoke to it, and he said, "Little bird, why are you lying on your back in the middle of the road?" "Sir," said the little bird, "I have heard that the sky is going to fall, and I am trying to prevent it. The traveler laughed and said, "But you are just a little bird. Do you really think that you can stop the sky from falling?" And the little sparrow let out a deep sigh. "One does what one can. One does what one can." We have to do what we can. And as I thought about this week, I wondered myself, did my ancestors, did they ever write a letter protesting slave children being taken away from their parents? Did they ever write a letter to Congress when a boatload of Jews escaping Nazi Germany requested asylum in the U.S.? Did my ancestors ever look into how orphans were being housed or cared for? Did they ever greet the immigrants who arrived in their town with a casserole? I want my great-grandchildren to be able to say, yes, my ancestors protested when they took away the children of the immigrants. We have a tradition of doing that in our family. Thanks, everyone.